Blog Talk Radio.
It's 3 p.m., and I have a question for you. Do you know where your politicians are? Everything is political in your life, from the moment you're born to the moment you die. And when a politician tells you that's not true, look in your pocket. You'll find their hand in it. Everything is political. We will be talking to those politicians that are working for you and talking about those politicians that are working against you. Just because they're a Democrat, or just because they're a Republican, and you voted that way your entire life, maybe you were wrong. Because everybody is not what they seem to be. However, there are a few out there who are working for your benefit, and we are going to bring them to you. We're going to let you hear them. We're going to ask them questions. We're going to let you ask them questions. And we're going to be discussing education system, the military, science, music, sports, oh, and health care. Do you have it? Do you need it? Are your 26-year-olds still on the family health care plan? Or, as the regressive party says, Obamacare. We will bring you what you need to know, because this is the last word. And everything, from the cities, counties, state, nation, the entire world. So sit down and get a pencil, paper, and take this graduate education experience. And we will make sure that you have the last word. My name is Michael Lawson.
Listen up. I'm not a fool. I just want to understand.
Well, that Nasty Boy, I mean, what the hell happened with that record? That was all chopped up, and I mean, give me a break. I'm telling you, I gotta get rid of that. It's Friday, 3:07 p.m., and this is The Last Word. My name is Michael Lawson, and thank you, everybody, for tuning in again. You're doing Nasty Boys. The reason why I wanted to play that is because all the nasty stuff is going on down there in Washington with these daggone clown Republicans. That clown in the wheelchair. I mean, the one that's down there, that congressman down there, good-looking boy in the wheelchair. All of a sudden he came out and started talking about how much drugs and lines they were using. They went to some private club. I mean, give me a break. That's right. That's what he said. He said they were using lines. He said, and we ain't talking about the young guys. We're talking about the older guys. He didn't name any. But I tell you, it's going to be a doozy. I don't know who he was talking about. They're wondering who he was talking about also. Oh, I'm just trying to pull this up here. I can't get this guy's name for you. Cawthorn. That's what it was. Madison Cawthorn. And, I mean, what the heck is going on down here? Well, hey, we know these Republicans are completely nut jobs. I think he was in the Naval Academy or something, but he's a victim of some woman alleged sexual misconduct against him. I mean, how the hell did she get in a position where this could have happened? But anyway, Cawthorn, he's on the fire now, boy. Oh, they're after his butt. He said the Republicans faced condemnation from House Minority Leader over podcast remarks, but will not face immediate discipline. The North Carolina Congressman Madison Cawthorn will not face immediate discipline action over his claim to have been invited to orgies and to have seen Washington figures using cocaine. At the meeting with Cawthorn on Wednesday, the House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy,
McCarthy, he told reporters, this is unacceptable. There's a large difference between the things that can happen, McCarthy said, regarding possible consequences. I just told him he's lost my trust. He's going to have to earn it back. And I laid out everything I find unbecoming. And you just can't say you can't do this again. I mean, he's got a lot of members very upset. Carthor is a right-wing gadfly of Donald J. Trump. He made his remarks about orgies and drugs in an interview with the podcast Warrior Poets Society posted online last week. Asked if the Netflix hit House of Cards about amoral Washington politician fixtures was anything like really, Carthon said, the only thing that isn't accurate is the show that you could never get a piece of legislation about education passed that quickly. I mean, being kind of a young guy in Washington, where the average age is probably 60 to 70, you know, I look at all these people, a lot of them I looked up to through my life, I always paid attention to politics. Then all of a sudden you get invited to, well, we're going to have a kind of sexual get-together at one of our homes, you know, you should come. I'm like, why'd they ask me? The Republicans also claim, you know, some of the people that are leading on the movement to try to remove addiction in this country and then watch them do, you know, a key bump of cocaine right in front of you, it's like, wow, this is wow. Key bump. It's like turning for a small amount, you know. Hey, could have fooled me, I don't know. McCarthy met Carthon with Republican Chief Whip Steve Scalise in attendance. According to Mari Leah, Carthon admitted some of his remarks were untrue and exaggerated. In an interview, McCarthy said he claims to have watched people do cocaine. Then he comes and says he thinks he may be as a staffer in the parking garage from 100 yards away. I'm just frustrated. It's just frustrating. There's no evidence behind the statements. I told you can't make statements like this as a member of Congress. It affects everybody in the whole country. Carthon did not immediately comment. Well, how about the 60 to 70-year-olds? That's true, isn't it? McCarthy fielded comments about Carthon's remarks about numerous House Republicans. Senators weighed in, too. But Wednesday, McCarthy and Scalise told reporters that they would wait to see if Carthon's behaviors were considerably punitive. Obviously, the ball's in his court in terms of how to respond. Carthon is a vocal member of the powerful far right of the House Republican Caucus. McCarthy is aiming to become Speaker next year. On Wednesday, prominent House Democrat Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, New York, asked on Twitter why Republicans are acting so shocked by Carthon's alleged revelations about their party. One of the members, Matt Gaetz of Florida, another far right congressman, is being investigated for sex trafficking in minors, and they're pretty okay with that. You think? Give me a break. So, what are we going to do? These guys are completely off the deep end. I mean, you know, there's nothing that we can talk about, not a thing, that these guys haven't screwed up. Not a thing. Let's see if we got somebody on the line here who's just on the line. Hello, did you want to say something?
Yes, sir. Are you talking about the government literally messing up everything all the time because every time something is put in their hands, they destroy it? unnecessarily and costs a bunch of taxpayers a bunch of money to make it happen?
Listen, you got to remember that the people that we elect are just like us. They're no different.
I know,
They try to be different.
I know.
They try to be different.
They're not.
They
I
say
know,
they're different.
They're not special. They're not special. They just have a very good word game when it comes to election time.
Oh,
absolutely.
Yes. That's good. That's absolutely true. That's very true. Word game. That's
Michael
good word. I didn't use that. I didn't use that.
Michael
word
Malice
game. That's right.
My heart. It's not different.
No, it ain't.
What are you playing here these days?
What's that?
What's the argument on the table? Because I actually want to have fun with it. How you doing, sir?
Well, I am going to have a county commissioner on, who is very good, Lee Altman. But I'm going to have Michael Cohen and. And I'll play some of his mea culpa, which is unbelievable.
Can I comment on self in retrospect?
Yes. Yes, you can. Go ahead.
I appreciate that.
Yes, I'm saying.
Thank you very much.
Go ahead.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, the entire concept is ridiculous. I don't know how many times we can keep shooting ourselves in the foot. Like, at what point does our foot scar over? You know
what
I mean?
Well, here's the thing. How do we, you know, and this is my first, my intro, I say, just because you've voted for a Democrat, or just because you've voted for a Republican your entire life, maybe you were wrong. Because everybody's not what they seem to be.
Yes, you should automatically come in. Well, can you hear me out on this one? Because this is actually important.
Go ahead.
The cornerstone of being American is never trusting the government. I don't care if they're Democrats or Republicans. We literally went to war over British people treating our people like crap and then raising taxes, and we started the Revolutionary War. So, no, we never trust government. I don't care if they're Democrats or Republicans. That's your baseline.
Well, see, here's the thing. I understand what you're saying. But you got to trust somebody sometime a little bit.
I know. That's
trust
called family.
Until you don't trust them anymore. You know what I mean?
No. You start with trusting family. And then you start trusting community. You'll never trust a politician. I guarantee you that. Let me save you a lot of heartache. You'll never trust a politician. They lie all the time. They say nonsense to get into positions of power, and then they break your heart.
Well, now, I can't say that because I know plenty of politicians that have never broken my heart. I know plenty. And I know quite a few that have. So I can't paint the brush on everybody. I can't paint them the same way.
Hold on. That's not fair. Hold on. It's not fair. Because no matter if you trust the politician and you still trust them today, they're never going to actually inculcate. They're not going to actually do anything on the promises they made. Because everybody comes into political power with a promise like, hey, that thing that you really like, yeah, I'm going to solve that. Nobody that you know, nobody that has disappointed you in politics, then they're never going to get anything done either way. Is that fair? Because that thing you really care about, yeah, I'm gonna handle that, and then it never happens.
Well, you see, here's the thing. It's just like when you're playing pinochle.
Pinochle, you really went there?
Well, just play? Oh, we played.
You're playing some dice. You're playing some dice in an alley.
Yeah. No. Because you're
in
playing
a major
by yourself.
City somewhere.
See, you're not playing. You're playing dice in an alley. You're playing for yourself. You're not playing with a partner. Now, see,
mm-hmm.
The thing is that when you have a partner, you get a partner so you can go along and get things done. Now, there are 535 people in this partnership we got in the Congress, and so many want to go one way, so many want to go another way. Now we got this group out here that wants to go another way, so you're down to one-third. You're not even one-half anymore.
Yep.
So
and what's the rule? What's the rule to change a law there, buddy? 60%? You understand the conundrum that
yeah.
we keep placing ourselves
yes.
in?
Yes. But you see, you have to be able to go along with somebody. So you gotta find somebody that you like. And you gotta remember that you like that one person. That one person is going in and say, look, this is what I want to do for you. And I will try my best to get it done. I don't mean it's going to get done because he's got, he has 435 other people that might not want it done. So it's not going to get done because it's, just like a Star Trek, does it need the many outweigh the need of the few? Or does it need the few outweigh the need of the many?
Okay, this is my problem, though, is that they're telling me there are five lights when I know that there's four. And they keep pressing me, and I don't know how people all across America are dealing with this stuff. My response to this was simply to just buy more ammunition for my pistol and my rifle. I don't know what they expect from us.
That's not going to help you when they got nuclear weapons. What the heck is a pistol going to do for you? Nothing.
You
waste
think
time.
That they're going to nuke their
it's
own
a waste
country?
Waste of money. Why not?
It's not a waste of money. No. We learned that it was. We learned that it was not. No, hold on. We learned that it was not a waste of money because Russia invaded Ukraine and they were trying to take Ukrainian territory, and they started using guerrilla tactics and kind of went ape nonsense on the ground. And Russia lost a lot more people that were dressed in camo.
If
I'm just
you
saying,
really
this is
believe,
stuff that people need to understand.
Yes, but if you really believe that the Ukrainian soldiers did that to the Russian soldiers without our intercepts and scientific help, you have another thing coming.
I
we were
don't think
them
that they did that without
these,
that.
Heck no! They never been.
No, the only reason that the Ukrainians were able to do that is with outside support. And
absolutely.
Most of those casualties on the Russian side were from, like, the Ukrainian military is kind of, it's kind of oxymoronic. It's like, you guys aren't actually that tough. Like, that's great that we have pilots that can fire MiGs, but the people that actually had a a big impact on the Russians invading were random people with Kalashnikovs.
Nah. Have you ever been in the military? No, there's no such thing.
I went to Nigeria in 2015.
They did nothing. Okay, but you went to Nigeria.
They gave me an
M4. You went
to
Nigeria and did what? What did you do there?
I moved it. Hold on. I'm telling you. I moved to town. Boko Haram was about to move into a town in eastern Nigeria. We moved them in through Cameroon into Chad because there were negotiations. And, I made sure that little girls were not prostitutes and little boys were not child slaves, like slave soldiers.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's not really fighting. Fighting when you go out and you hunt the other guy. That's not really
Hold on. You think we didn't fight Boko Haram along the way?
No, hey, I didn't say that. But you didn't go out and hunt Boko Haram. There's a big difference.
If you want me to hunt Boko Haram, that's a totally different conversation.
Yeah, but doing a campaign is different than being a defensive a person assisting people. Big difference.
Okay, I know. It was completely, it was defensive. Okay, I know, but I'm American. I cannot represent America in a concept
of
actual war.
Of course. Well, hey, you can. Nobody says nobody. Somebody's got to stop you first. But the thing is, what I'm saying is that we have, what you're saying is partly true, but you got to have representation. The world is too big for everybody to sit by, well, I'll take care of me. You can't, that cannot be done anymore. This isn't 1776. You can't do that anymore. You have to have someone represent you. And if you don't like none of those people, then you got to find somebody to represent you. But you can't
think,
I'm just going to get me a couple of barrels of ammo and sit back here and just wait. No, you will be blown up. Please,
Hold on.
Up like a
truck. Do you know the difference there? Is that there are soldiers and there are Marines and there are corpsmen and there are all these people that wear a flag on their shoulder, right?
Right.
There are people that represent their country when they go into battle, right?
Right.
I didn't have to do that because I was a contractor, so I was actually able to get away with a lot of stuff that military people were not able to get away with.
Of course. Uh-huh. And
no, but we had them all over. Like, we had Australians in there. We had, like, Swedish people in there. We had, Bosnians. We had people, and all they had to do was have a rudimentary understanding of English, and we could easily take them into Africa and forward, left, right, shoot. Yeah, it wasn't actually that complicated.
Right, I understand that. But you see, that's not war. That's not war. It's like all these guys running around in the North Carolinian woods every Saturday with their camel uniform. That ain't war. Ain't nobody shooting at them.
Hold on. Hold on. There is the word conflict, violent conflict, right? There is violent conflict. And what is war but violent conflict on a larger scale? War is violent conflict on a large scale, and then there was what we experienced in Nigeria. I mean, it's not that different. I mean, what we did in Libya,
I can show you something different. When I was in Vietnam, and we were doing the Tet Offensive, and they overran the Nang Air Base, that's violent conflict. What you're talking about is violent conflict.
Man, you're an old man, mister.
an
old man, mister. God bless you.
That's right. That's right. Absolutely.
God bless me.
That was violent conflict. That's not violent conflict what you're talking about. But you got to understand.
I got shot.
Well, hey, you get shot walking down the street here. That don't mean nothing.
I know.
So, see,
what
you're
the
not
hell?
Giving me any, you're not giving me any good sense of, I know what you want to say, but what you're leaving out is you need to pick someone who will represent you in office that you firmly believe will represent you. Now, if they don't represent
you
correctly, you get rid of them. You don't vote for them again.
No, I don't believe that. Americans, we are the most terrifying people on the planet because it doesn't matter who's representing us. Do you know the blade of grass concept? From World War II, where they say that you can't invade the American, you can't invade the American mainland because there will be a gun hiding behind every blade of grass.
All right.
So it doesn't matter how many tanks you roll in or troops you roll in. It doesn't matter where you go. There's always an American there with a gun it doesn't matter if they're good with it or not. They have the ability to take you out, and you should probably not invade America.
Well, that's true, unless you're invading with a nuclear weapon, then all your guns and all your pockets and all your basements don't mean a darn thing. One nuclear weapon gets rid of all, well, you don't, but you don't think. But no one's asking you because you're not in charge of things.
No.
There are people up there in Washington and all over the world who are paid to think that scenario.
I'm
and
aware of that, but here's my simple understanding,
yeah,
because I'm a novice when it comes to running the world, because I don't do that. Washington, D.C. will be very hesitant. So will Moscow. So will Beijing. So will Pyongyang. So will five other countries. They do not want to be the first one to pull the trigger, because that will destroy everything that they've built over the last 1,000 years.
Well, we did it.
In America, the last, like, 500 years.
We did it in World War II. We did it in World War II. Pulled the trigger.
No, no, no. The only way to...
We did.
Do you know why we did that?
I know why we did it, but we did it, though, is what I'm saying.
Okay, hold on. It's important. It's important to say why, because it's a trivium. Why did we drop those two atom bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki? Why did we do that?
Well, the great concept is because we did not want to lose all those people, all our soldiers going and invading Japan. That's the,
we
but
did not. We wanted to lower
but
the amount
a lot,
of casualties.
But we are. But
no,
there's a lot of other
had,
people that say. There's a lot of other people
we,
that
we
say
lost,
no.
We lost
we
like 200.
The weapon. There's a lot
I'm
of people
sorry, but
that now say we want to lose the weapon.
Okay, but there was about 200,000 to 300,000 people lost, and that's so unfortunate. And God bless all of them that lost their lives and their families that mourned for them. And here we are, two generations later, or three generations later. The reality of the situation is, Japanese people, with their mindset at the time, with their emperor, they were not going to concede unless the emperor told them to. So,
well,
if we had a ground
invasion, we
would have
lost a lot of soldiers with an invasion, right? Mm-hmm.
Yes, but I'm saying
that's the general. I don't want to cut you off. That is because I have another call here. But that's the general concept. What they're given. There's a lot of people that say, no, we did it because we could and we needed the test bomb to get the Russians off our back.
No, that's not why it happened. They did it because they did not want a bunch of Japanese people to die.
Say,
we would have done a ground invasion.
That's the overall concept that's always been out there, but there is another concept that's been out there also, is that the industrial complex wanted to test their weapon, and we were afraid that the Russians were
if they wanted to cause the most no, this is my problem with that, because if they wanted to cause the most harm, they would have dropped one over Tokyo and Kyoto. They didn't do that.
They dropped it over
Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
No, I didn't say they wanted to cause the most harm. They wanted to set an example and see if it actually did work, because we didn't know if it was going to work or not.
We already dropped these bombs over several islands before.
Yeah, right, but there was no people there. There's only garbage, just trees.
Yeah, well, no, we had to evacuate an entire populace to make one of those drops.
Right.
But yeah, sure, there were no people there.
Yeah, thank goodness. But you are great. What's your name? First name.
I'm Josh. How you doing, bud?
Josh, lovely conversation. But I have an important. You're welcome to stay on. You ask questions of our county commissioner who's coming. Where are you calling? You're not calling from. Where are you from? What area?
Right now I'm in Central Illinois.
Central Illinois. Okay. Well, you're welcome to stay aboard. And I have our city councilman, county commissioner coming on. And you can see it now. This young lady, who is the county commissioner here in Mecklenburg County, has been wonderful. This is one of the people I say that you have to know in order to understand what a good councilman is supposed to do. this is a good councilman. And when you think of the things that, well, when you say the things that you were saying before about what you were saying, that you can't really trust them because they don't really do any good. Well, hey, a lot of instances, I will agree with you. A lot of instances, I would agree with you. But there are those that, as I said at the beginning of my show, just because you voted that way your entire life, Democrat or Republican, maybe you were wrong. But not particularly with this young lady. Let's see if I can, let me pull her up here.
Can you hear me?
Commissioner!
Hey, can you hear me?
Lee Altman, how are you?
Great, how you doing, sir?
I am doing fine, I'm doing fine. As I was telling Josh, I think you are one of the outstanding commissioners that we have in this state, more or less the city.
Thank
and
you, sir. I appreciate that very much.
And you have been, I mean, the things that you were, health and the housing, you have lived up to mostly everything. And here's the one question I have for you. Why do you want to run again and then maybe spoil everything that you did before?
That's funny. Well, you know, I really appreciate the chance to talk to you and to your listeners. And I heard the gentleman beforehand, and I think what he's expressing is, you know, a really common feeling of people tuning out, losing hope, losing faith and confidence, and there's a lot of good reasons to feel that way.
Right.
And that's why we have to fight. Yeah, we have to fight really hard to people in office because it matters a lot. I mean, you know, it's obvious at the national level why it matters, and it's very obvious at the state level why it matters. But sometimes people don't really see why, for example, it matters at the local level. But you take COVID, for example. Governor Cooper did a lot of great things, but at a certain point, he stopped making policy at the county level, and he left it to individual counties. And you know we're making some progress getting through COVID, but let's all remember that there was a long period of time there where it was really scary and a lot of people were getting sick. And you know, it came down to 9 county commissioners to decide whether or not to put a mask mandate in for this county.
Mm-hmm.
That mattered a lot.
Absolutely.
Life and death,
I agree.
Right, the functionality of people to be able to gather safely at all. And, you know, I'm proud to have fought for a countywide mask mandate because that's what the science supported and that's what our public health director was supporting. But there were other communities that didn't have local officials who were willing to follow the science. And so,
that's just one
example.
I don't want to cut you off, but why do people who have gone to school their entire life, they have their kids going to school their entire life, and now they say, oh, I don't believe in none of that science. What's gotten in the head? I don't understand that. I don't understand that.
There's been a of eroding of public confidence by people who were in trusted positions, who abused their positions for various selfish reasons. And that's hurt our body politic. It's hurt our community. I think it is so important that when you are an elected official you're a public figure, you're in the public eye, you have such an important duty to always be grounded in the facts and to relay the facts. Sometimes it'll get you more likes and more tweets if you say something inflammatory that's not really well grounded in the facts, you know, and people get distracted by that shiny object, but it harms the confidence of the community in the news and, you know, elected officials when people don't be very careful that they are factually based when they speak. So, like, for example, during the pandemic, Public Health was doing sometimes 3 updates a week, 3 press conferences a week.
Right.
And you know what? I took the time to listen to them and to do a summary of them. And I sent them out to my entire mail list, posted it across social media, because it was the unfiltered direct from the public health director telling people where we were and what the evolving information was. That's the kind of thing.
Right.
It's not like really sexy, but I think it's really helpful, because it helps people to actually have factual information that they can use to protect themselves. And that's the kind of unglamorous work that helps to rebuild confidence in our institutions. And I want to see more of that, because that's how we empower people with the truth to make good choices for them and their families.
Well, you know, the thing is that the county commissioners, that's their job. Their job isn't to worry about what's going on in the Senate Armed Services Committee. That's not their job. Their job is not to worry about what's going on in Bosnia. But we have so many that don't care about their community. And, you know, when you talk about the juvenile crime prevention and you talk about the Habitat for Humanity, I mean, these are the things that we, ordinary people, need to hear from the person we're putting in office. And here's another thing. How the hell can you get anything done in 2 years? I don't understand.
Well, a couple things on that. I want to tell the good people of Mecklenburg County who are listening to this that they are blessed with some wonderful county commissioners. I'm really proud to serve with my colleagues. George Dunlap is our chairman, you know, committed. Mark Durrell, committed. Val Malik, committed. Elaine Powell, committed. I mean, these are, I have seen the sausage up close, and I'm here to tell you that these individuals care deeply, and I see them as tremendous public servants. So first of all, while there is much to be cynical about in the world, in politics, I feel blessed to serve with my colleagues on the County Commission of Mecklenburg County. What can you get done in 2 years? Well, it's true. That's a very painfully short cycle. And, you know, I represent at large, which means I am elected by all 1.1 million residents of Mecklenburg County. And that means I do my utmost. You know, City of Charlotte is just a part of it. There's Huntersville, you know, Cornelius, Davidson, Tynesville, Stallings, Matthews, Mint Hill, you know. And so it is a heavy lift to get something done when you're covering such a large region. But people are on two-year cycles, and they have to fly to D.C. And I think we can all think of instances where the public did need to recall a public servant sooner rather than later. And so although it's hard on people like me who are doing the work, I think it's probably in some way there's some benefits to the community to have us on two-year cycles, because it keeps us very close to the people where we need to be. And, when you have people like me on and you help me talk to the community, then you make it easier for us to continue to do the work, because the hard part is reaching people. And I'm really grateful to you to take a little time out of your programming for this purpose.
That's no problem. I'll do that every day if it was on every day. The thing is that Mecklenburg County is unique because it's all one. It's all Democrat. So you guys can get things done a lot quicker than a place that's, you know, 5-4 or, you know, something like that. There's a little extra in it for Mecklenburg County, because we get things done because we have everybody pulling the same way. They're not always pulling against one another.
Well, I have to tell you that we are, we have been able to invest $20 million in affordable housing this past fiscal year. We have been able to allocate, $26 million in behavioral health and health equity out of ARPA funds. We've been able to invest in all kinds of efforts to reduce racial disparities and bring greater justice to this community because ideologically we all know that that's what we need to be doing and we're all committed to that work.
Right.
So I agree with you that we're fortunate to have folks on board who are pulling in such a great direction for the residents
of
this community.
And some of the last 2 years, what is the most heartfelt or most enjoyable project that you felt like that you needed to get through and you got it done?
Well, that's tough because there are quite a few things I'm really, really excited about. But to me, the most important thing is that we focus on raising household income. Because, you know, I've heard estimates between 20 and 40,000 youth that are needed in this community. And the city of Charlotte's working hard to build. The towns are. Mecklenburg County, as I said, committed very serious resources to help with the problem. But all the experts agree that we will never build enough to keep up with the demand.
Right.
And so we have to think seriously about how we can help people, afford the necessities of life better. Including housing, including transportation, including health care. Now, here in Mecklenburg County, we had this 50th out of 50. You know, if you're born poor in Mecklenburg County, you're more likely to not break out of that than 49 other similarly situated cities. And that's a source of we all are focused on that and deeply worried about that. Meanwhile, we have this incredible boom here in this community, all of these employers with tremendous labor needs that they cannot fill these seats. So I believe, and I have championed for Mecklenburg County, a workforce development initiative, because I believe we need to do more to connect our unemployed residents, our underemployed residents, our residents that are in jobs with stagnant wages that do not pay a family-sustaining wage. We need to better orient them to the hiring employers of this region that have tremendous room for growth. You know, the skilled trades are booming. Tech, IT, advanced manufacturing. And we need to make this easier for people to know about. I need to be able to walk into every precinct meeting, neighborhood association meeting, church meeting, what have you, and have in my hot little hand something that is at least updated on a quarterly basis. That lets people know, hey, there are 300 jobs in this arena. There's 600 jobs in this arena. Here's where you go in the region to get the training. Here are the stackable degrees that you can keep growing and advancing and increasing your income. That information is so hard to get, and it should not be. So
why is that hard to get?
That information? Not collated where I can find in a really updated fashion. You can find websites, but it's like the Department of Labor update from, 2020. That is not actionable information for someone looking to get a job today and to talk to kids who are graduating from high school that, college is an awesome route. It's fantastic. But there are other great routes too, because
the thing is, we're supposedly, I understand now, we have, we're almost back up to the point of where we were pre-COVID as far as jobs. But there's still plenty of jobs, right, unemployment. But there's still plenty of jobs out there. Why don't these people go get some jobs? I don't understand it. What's preventing them from getting these jobs?
I think that there are jobs available, but what people are looking for are careers that will really allow them to build household wealth and for us to close the gaps that exist in household income and home ownership. You know, on every single metric, communities of color continue to not enjoy the wealth of this community like the white community. And that is something that we have got to address, and we have got to make real material progress on. And so that's why it's not just any job. Job that has that kind of growth, that pays that family sustaining wage, that we need to be setting our residents up for to know even exist, because I think a lot of people don't necessarily think about skilled trades or advanced manufacturing. When they think of manufacturing, they think of something dirty, like unsafe work conditions. And that's a, right. a very outdated, you know, view of it. And so I think that there's a lot of educating that we need to do as a community to think about, hey, what's going to be the return on my investment? If I go to CPCC and get this degree and something that I know there's an employer that is desperate for, and then I can go back and get another certificate on top of that, and then in 2 years, I can go back and get another and keep building. Now you're really talking about economic mobility. And that's what I think we need to have a clearer conversation about locally, so that we can, next time that survey gets done, blow it out of the water, that this is a great place for upward economic mobility for all of our residents.
Well, you know, well, what you're saying is very true. And I remember myself growing up, that was the – I'm from New York, you know. I didn't have the problem to have down here. I grew up in a middle-class family. And I had everything I always wanted growing up for Christmas, for my birthday, for – Halloween, everything I wanted to go. I was at Catholic school my whole life, and I went to high school, and I never wanted for a thing. I never saw anything in the store that I didn't ask for. I never got. Now, I wasn't out running the streets every single night and holding up people or anything else, but that's a different story. And people, I was around people who thought that way, that the only way was to get more, to get up higher so you could get more.
Right.
Now, when I came down here in the South, and I guess it's just where it was, just how it is down the South, I saw people who did not have the oomph to get more. They were satisfied with what they had. Nothing. And it didn't bother them. Now, all of a sudden, we had the COVID come up. Everybody's out of a job. Nobody's working. But they're getting an income from the federal government. And they're saying, well, you know what? Wait a minute. Why should I go back to that waitress job making $5.35 an hour when I can go get... my high school diploma and make $9.35 an hour. Do you see a change since the COVID came about to where we are now, with people's thinking, rational thinking about what they want to do and what they want has changed things?
I think that we all sort of have, you know, anecdotes and individuals that we've encountered, you know, but when you take sort of a step back and you look at it from 30,000 feet, you know, what I see is I see a community that, you know, was really beset by something that was just unprecedented, that none of us knew what we were dealing with. And that, you know, we had communities that were really disproportionately hit hard by COVID, with loss of life and, you know, forgot the number, but it's, you know, the number of children in America who are orphaned because they lost their primary caretaker. And then if you add in those who, for whom grandparents were primary caretaker, you know, it's,
right.
You know, what I'm really focused on, you know, it was a hard time, we were all scrambling as individuals, as residents, and as policymakers who were responsible for keeping the public safe to do as much harm mitigation as possible. And nobody got it right all the time. Nobody
right.
did. But I appreciate those who were governed by a sense of duty, health and human life, and to use science and rationality and to work their hearts out to do it. And I certainly saw that here in Mecklenburg County with our county manager and our public health director. And now it's time to pivot. Hopefully we don't have another
right.
variant coming. Hopefully
Please.
It's time to pivot. We
gosh.
Can embrace the summer and we can, you know, we can start to look at how we really in earnest reboot from COVID. And we've got a COVID recovery task force that's made some really strong recommendations for Mecklenburg County that were, put together not in some back room, but through really extensive community engagement that was, you know, like a lot of effort to make sure that it was balanced from across the community. And I'm really proud of that, too. So,
well,
you know,
I'm
going to keep on.
Can I interject?
Yeah, go ahead, Josh. Yes, you want to hear something? Josh?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. My sister and her family just moved from San Ramon, the Bay Area of California, over to Charlotte. So this actually impacts my family a little bit. So the stuff that needs to be happening, what did you think about how the transition from the nonsense before in Virginia actually flipped over? Like, he was like, no, you're not going to indoctrinate children. Is that something that you're willing to stand for?
What, indoctrination? Like yeah, well, we don't understand what you're saying. Like what? Yeah, say that again.
Yeah, I'm sorry. No, the reason that the governor of Virginia got elected was because the previous governor was pushing a bunch of stuff on parents accepting ridiculous behavior when it comes to teaching their children, and he was like, no, I'm not going to do that. I don't know. Is there something that you can provide for us to actually elect you that would protect children?
Protect children from what? I'm missing the point. Protect children from what? What are we talking about?
You're running for, I'm sorry, what position? The county commissioner in
yes,
Charlotte?
Gotcha.
So let me just give you like quick lowdown. Civics 101, just here locally. You got sort of three big main branches of local government. You got the school board, the city council, and the county commission. School board, obviously, the schools. City is more like hard services like roads, CNPD, transportation, fire, that kind of thing. Think of the county as soft services. It's a $2 billion budget for public health, mental health, education, welfare, all of our Department of Social Services programs, park, rec, clean water, and that's just the highlights. There's a lot more important stuff in there. And what I would say, and then, Michael, if it's okay, I'm going to have to jump off.
go ahead.
But what I would – okay, cool. What I would say is I hope, if nothing else, from the time that I've spent guys today and for those who are listening, I hope that your listeners think to themselves, you know what? I need to check my voter registration. And if you just do this, if you just Google MECBOE, for MEC Board of Elections, MECBOE. And if you click that know before you go link, you're going to see on the left something that says information for voters. And then on the far right, you're going to see a link to click that says check your voter registration. And that's going to take you to another place. And that's the North Carolina Board of Elections. And you're going to be able to confirm where you're registered to vote. Because look, y'all, early voting starts in, what's today? Starts in like 2.5 weeks. It starts on
yep.
April 28th. And here's something that Josh needs to know because he's new to Mecklenburg County. Many of our local races are decided in the primary because our political demographics, just the way that kind of plays out. many races are settled after the in the primary election. So if you wait to tune in, if you wait
right.
to go vote until the general election, you will have missed the boat. And I hope
right.
you, I hope it's clear just with the mask mandate as one example why it matters that you vote, because Governor Cooper stopped making policy and it was up to the nine of us. And I'm proud to have been the only at-large county commissioner that did vote for the mask mandate. So what y'all need to do, if you're listening, make sure you're registered to vote, put April 28th on your calendar, and go vote. Don't wait till May 17th when the primary actually is, because there could be lines then.
Absolutely.
It's so
Absolutely.
Easy to go do early voting. And just knock it out, because you have no one to point the finger at when you don't like something if you don't go vote. And if there is something that you don't
Absolutely.
Like and you voted, you can call me. That's why I'm here.
Yeah, yes, ma'am. No, I was just looking for a reason to annoy my sister into voting for somebody. God bless. Thank you.
Amen.
What
Thank
is
you.
Up?
All right, well, my name is Lee Altman, County Commissioner at Large.
And what's a – how else can we get a hold of you? Email, how?
Absolutely, absolutely. My website is leealtman.com, and you spell Lee, LEIGHALTMAN.com. My email is votesleealtman@gmail.com. And you can also Google MECC, B-O-C-C. BOCC stands for Board of County Commissioners, and there you will find my contact information and all of my colleagues, and we want to hear from you. We want to do the work, so please reach out and hopefully let us all inspire that there's still a lot of good out there in public service and just build a great community together.
You've been great. Thank you very much. I know you've been.
Thank you, Michael. Have a wonderful day. Take care.
Okay, bye-bye. That was Lee Altman, County Commissioner of McMurray County at large. And she's running again, and she is going to be another great. Now, Josh, I still not quite understood what you were trying to say. The question. Maybe the County Commissioner did, but I didn't understand it.
Well, no, I'm happy to explain myself. I mean, it's not that complicated what I was asking for.
It's complicated to me because I didn't understand it. Go ahead.
You're one of those East Coast guys, aren't you? No, I'm just messing with you.
I sure am. Well, we're still on the East Coast. You know, we're South. We're Southeast now. I'm Southeast now.
Oh, yeah. And make sure to breathe through your nose and exhale through your mouth. There you go.
That's right. That's what we do.
No, do you want me
okay,
to explain myself here?
Explain, please.
When it comes to the Democratic Party, obviously, historically, they're terrible. When it comes to the Republican Party, they had one good, solid stance in 1841, and then stuff seemed to crumble in the mid-1900s.
1841, holy cow.
Yeah, the beginning of the Civil War. How dare I read books? How dare I read those books?
How dare you read books? That's right. How dare you read them?
I know. That's a nerd status.
So what was the story now? What were you trying to explain? What you wanted to explain?
Well, the simplicity, I don't know, when it comes to all Americans, you know, we used to have the Whig Party. We used to have, like, five different parties back in the day. And it's astonishing to me that in modernity, we have, like, the Libertarian Party, which is a freaking joke. Everybody knows that. There's nothing tangible about that. That's
Libertarian?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
it's
Libertarian,
an imaginary
yeah.
thing,
okay.
yeah. I was talking about unicorns
yeah.
at that point. Yeah,
Unicorn
and then we
Libertarian
have...
Party.
Yeah, write that down. Yeah, no, I don't think that any of these parties that we keep boasting up, the people that run this country, I don't think they're giving anybody any potential upward mobility. And that's why I think nobody trusts them anymore.
Well, see,
and
would you
I'm
say
not
they
wrong.
Don't give them upward mobility? I see, I don't understand what you mean. They don't give them upward mobility. What do you mean by that?
Hold on. They don't offer.
Okay.
They don't offer an upward mobility. They don't offer upward mobility. There is no up ramp for anybody to have a better time when it comes to the Democrats, the Republicans, the Libertarians, the Green Parties, the Independents. All of these people, they don't offer a better solution to the situation that we're facing right now. So that's the reality that we have to deal with right now. Nobody's trying to solve stuff that we keep doing to ourselves. And that's where we're at.
Okay, well, what you're saying is, can you come up with something new?
Well, I mean, you could buy a bunch of nonsense. You could buy...
What I'm trying to say is, it's easy to say that nobody else, they're not doing nothing, but it's because that you don't like what they're doing, so you say they're doing nothing. But if you have a better solution, why don't you offer it to them?
No, hold on. That's the actual problem.
Okay.
I'm saying that the people in power right now are not offering a solution. I have a solution. It's actually pretty simple.
Oh, okay.
The government sucks at almost everything.
Nothing is simple when you have billions of people on the planet. Nothing is simple.
Okay, we're not talking about billions of people on the planet. We're talking about 325 million people in America.
You know that
let's deal with that first.
Everybody else. Okay, go ahead.
I know because they look up to us. I'm aware
of
that.
Well, then there it is. So we're affecting billions of people. So what is your solution, at least some sort of solution?
Are you
what
asking
do you have?
This? No, it's a simple solution.
Okay. Go ahead.
The solution when it comes to this stuff that we're dealing with all the time is actually very simple.
Okay.
Simplify the situation, privatize, wash your hands like Pontius Pilate. Wash your hands. We keep doing this stuff governmentally. The government sucks at everything. Everybody agrees on that all the time. I don't know how to come back from that.
Well, what can you do then in this place of it? What do you do
privatize.
In place of the privatize? What does that mean, privatize?
Private police forces, private military, people that are actually accountable and held to a standard based on
why
their
company. Why are they accountable? Why are they accountable?
Because
they're privatized.
Because they're contracted to be.
To be what?
It's no different than the military that we have right now. I don't know if you ever dealt with military people.
I have, plenty of times. My grandfather
was...
Yes, they are
contracted. Yes, my grandfather was also a member of the military. I'm just saying that they are contracted to be wholeheartedly devout to whatever they're ordered to do under this flag. And I'm saying that's great. You can also do that in a private capacity. I mean, I don't know how to sell this to you.
You can't do that. A private contractor does not have the same scruples or morals as a military contractor.
You're talking about a moral.
Vietnam.
You're talking about a moral.
What?
Hold on. You're talking about a moral stance on private contractors and military.
That's just one aspect. I just think
no,
one aspect.
No, that's the worst aspect. Okay, next aspect.
Well, okay. Greed.
Are you talking about people stealing stuff when they hit ground zero?
Greed by the owner of the contract. All right, let me give you an example. What about you think all the that the oil companies had to raise the prices to what they are right now? There's no oil shortage in the world. Why they raise the price?
I'm aware of
because,
that.
Because they can. Because they're the only game in town. And that's when you have a private contractor. They're a private contractor. They raise the price of oil. And why? Because they can. And who's to stop them?
Yes, I agree
time
with
you
that.
Stop them, the only time you stop them is you take them over. And the only one that can do that is the government.
Nope, not true at all.
Well, who else can take them over?
I think that people have this messed up conception of what government is in their mind. The government is created by man, right? And
well,
the people making decisions. Oh, absolutely. But the government is created by man, and they tend to be frail and really weak. You know, you wouldn't drop Joseph Robinette Biden Jr. and, I don't know, the president of Russia on an island and give them both a pocket knife and see who wins, and that would decide the actual conflict. I'm just saying this is a reality. These are old men. They don't do anything. They cannot actually survive an actual conflict. They send poor kids to die over and over again. This is what war always is. They send poor kids to die over land and resources. This has been happening for like 20,000 years.
Hey, you don't tell me I was in Vietnam.
Today.
You don't tell me about that. I was in Vietnam. We went over there for nothing. Okay? So now what?
You know
tell me
why?
About that. We were there for nothing.
You know why they sent you over there? No, they were trying to beat out communism. They were trying to beat out communism, and they already had it when they had South Korea. There was no way that they were going to win Vietnam.
There's no communism.
They already had
South Korea is not communist.
I know. No, you said Vietnam.
Right. Right.
Yeah. They were trying to beat out communism in Vietnam, and there was no way they were going to do that. They already had South Korea. They were done as South Korea, and they still wanted to go in to flex their muscles. That was nonsensical. That war should have never happened.
Yeah, I'm missing the boat here when you're saying they already had South Korea. You mean South Korea is not communist?
I know. I'm saying that they already had South Korea. They had South Korea, what was that, 1954 when they went in?
That's the French had South Korea.
The French never had anything.
South Vietnam, I should say. South Vietnam.
Okay.
But the French had South Vietnam, had Vietnam, period.
Yes, America should not have gone into Vietnam. I agree with that.
We never should have went there, but that's the reason why, and you see why one of the big things that I haven't heard anybody talk about yet that they need to talk about is that the American fighting force, no one in the world could ever stop us because we have been in a war every year for the last 20 years, 30 years, 40 years. No other country has been that way. We have been in Vietnam, Korea, Vietnam, Grenada, Africa. We were over there with Iran. We're the only one that's been fighting.
You're telling me how Americans are scary because they're well trained.
That's right. They're well trained.
Yeah, I'm aware of that. Everybody in the world is aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they'll never come to our mainland because I swear to God, that'll be a totally different conversation.
But we also have about 6,000 miles between us on one side and 3,000 miles on the other side, so, you know, of water. So it's a big difference. We're not like in Europe. Just go a couple of miles.
Okay, but right there, that chuckle that you gave is exactly why we're so confident, because we have all the machinery. We have bases all over the place. Anybody that wants to come for us, ha, 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 good luck, MF. You're going to come across that shore, and you're just going to watch, like, 5,000 random Americans who have firearms just, like, you know, D-Day was terrifying. D-Day was devastating. You want to breach our shores? Holy crap. You will not understand.
No,
you're not going to make it past a few steps.
Individuals, listen, individuals would not be doing that. Our military could do that, 1, 2, 3, without any help from anybody else. They wouldn't need any
American. You know why that amendment's there, though, right?
It's civilians. It's the civilians, I should say, to help us. What amendment?
The second one, it's not about the military. I know people in the military.
That amendment was made in 1700. I don't even count that.
And we're here, 1700. Hold on. We're here today, and it's still important. This is the most important amendment that we have, other than the first one.
Isn't. No. Freedom of speech.
I'm gonna finish my rant for a second here.
Okay.
Yeah, the scariest people on the planet are the most well-armed people on the planet, and there are more guns per capita in America than any military base anywhere, ever. So I'm not too concerned about anybody invading our homeland because, dear Lord, oh, man, let me buy a rosary to pray for their souls because there's no freaking way that they're going home. They're going to be buried.
We also have more people in jail and prison than any place in the world.
You know why?
It doesn't matter why. We still do. No, it doesn't matter why.
It doesn't matter why.
China would. But that's not true.
No. Hell no. You know the trivium?
Go ahead.
The trivium is who, what, where, when, how, and why. That was the old school way. That's what the hell is that guy's name? The detective from Britain.
Sherlock Holmes.
What's his name? Sherlock Holmes. That was how that's how he determined his cases. Who, what, where, when, how, and why. He went through the trivium. And nowadays, you had to actually add an extra element to it to make sure that people's feelings were hurt. I'm still going with the original trivium. There is an actual logical objective reality that we have to deal with. And subjective opinion is adorable, but that will never do anything to help anybody ever. So we have to deal with the objective reality. I'm telling you right now, people keep deviating away from this, and it's going to make our society worse and worse and worse. Because the moment you accept a lie as reality to appeal to somebody's feelings, you destroy your entire society. Don't lie. It's not that complicated. Don't lie. Tell the truth. You know what I mean?
Well, we've been lied to before last year for 5 years. Everything was a lie. You may not know the man, but I know the man. I know the man from New York. Known him for 20 years. If he blinks his eyes, it's a lie. Don't believe it. He didn't blink his eyes. So
I'm not worried about that.
You can't say that. So the thing is that
I'm right here with you. Don't lie. If you lie, it hurts everybody, including yourself.
Absolutely.
Stop lying.
Absolutely. Well, you know, some people believe that they can do that because they can just do it.
They don't understand history.
You know, like Catherine McCart says, make it so.
This is the same thing as the fall of the Roman and Greek Empire. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing. Oh. We're doing that right now.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm not close. This is exactly what happened. This is what happened at the fall of the Roman Empire. This is exactly what happened.
So
people
how
are
do you
like,
stop
oh,
that
what
now?
Do words mean?
Is it possible
stop
to stop
lying.
It?
Stop lying.
Well, that ain't happening, so forget that. So that means we can't stop it then. But that's not going to happen. Because there are people that will do that. They just do it just because they can.
I have another solution. Are you ready for this?
Yep, I'm ready for it.
Keep your guns clean. Keep your ammo dry. And no, dude, why are we doing this? This makes no sense. We've seen empires fall with this nonsensical, licentious behavior. Dude,
they don't believe it. It's not going to happen to me. That's what they all say.
I don't believe. There is tangible, objective reality.
No,
we have to inhale through our nose and exhale.
But those other people don't understand it. The ones that do it, that's why they're doing it. So how do you convince them not to do it? That's the problem. How do you convince them not to do it?
I don't know. A diving board over an active volcano. A diving board over an active volcano.
But see, this is what you need to do in order to straighten us out. You got to have some answers to things. What is the answer? What can we do about this?
I'm happy to answer those questions, but people are so diluted today that there's no conversation anymore. You understand what I'm saying?
Okay.
You can't talk to these people.
Okay. Well,
I'm happy to answer questions.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'd like to know how we can do this. How we can prevent these moo-moos from doing the things they do.
Manual labor.
I mean,
cause
just...
manual labor.
There is no more manual
give
labor. Everybody
pick,
does...
Give them a pickaxe. Give them a pickaxe. Pickaxe and a boulder, and they'll come out there, man. They'll learn pretty quick that you can't be a female.
They'll learn pretty quick.
World
they'll
War
learn
III,
pretty quick, huh?
Getting drafted on the front lines. It's adorable if you want to frill your hair, but you're going to have to shoulder a rifle, too.
You think, huh? You think that's how it's going? Yeah, that's how easy it is. Huh?
That's what they did in Ukraine.
That's what they did in Ukraine. Huh?
Yeah, no, there is literally like an ABC documentary, and they had this conversation with this trans woman, whatever that is, and they're like, "Yeah, they won't let me cross the border as a woman because on my passport it says I'm a man." I'm like, "Yeah, pick up a rifle."
I ain't gonna make him change it. He can pick up a rifle, but that's not gonna make him change.
But he is a man, so he should pick up a rifle and defend his home, because that's what men do.
So this is the guy. This is the guy over in Ukraine, huh? Okay. He didn't want to pick up a rifle.
Not the only one. No. Hold on. This is the entire messed up concept when it comes to everybody around the world, especially Americans. Men are here to provide, protect, and I don't even know what the other P was. We provide for and protect women, children, and elderly people. That's what we do. And the moment you take that away by acting like a freaking man is a woman, no, he's not.
he needs to shoulder
a rifle the same as you.
I don't actually believe that that's why a man is here. I don't believe it.
You don't think a man is here to protect and provide for women, children, and the elderly?
Well, he's there to protect himself, too. No, I don't. I think that
everybody's going to pull their own weight.
Everybody's going to pull their own weight.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. But men bear the brunt. We have the hardest job in the world, protecting, providing for, and distributing resources that we mine ourselves, whether it's cornfields, beans, whatever, killing cattle and making steaks. That's what men do for women, children, and the elderly.
Yeah, but women do that too. They've done it all their lives. You'd have a whole lot of problems with the women I know. If you said
that's not news. Women have fought in wars. force. Women have hand-to-hand
women
combat.
Have absolutely.
No, you're talking about the Scandinavians. No other woman has gone to combat like the Scandinavian women. That's not real.
Oh, I don't believe that. I think the American women growing up in the Nordic days fought. The American Indian women fought. I mean, there's a lot of Indians, women that fight.
What tribe? What tribe? Fought alongside the men?
Oh, I didn't say fought alongside the men. But they fought. They did the hunting. They did the, lions and tigers.
What tribe?
It's like lions
what
and
tribe?
What tribe?
What tribe?
I don't remember. I saw this on TV. Let me see if I can find that. I wrote it down. Let's see if I wrote it down here.
What, the Comanche?
No, not the Comanche.
I know the Comanche didn't do that.
Not
the
Comanche. The
Lakota didn't do that.
No, it was... I have to... Find that.
It's not a real thing. Women did not hunt alongside the men. Women did not fight alongside men unless they were Scandinavian Vikings from Nordic countries.
Well, they did that.
No, they did not. I'm telling you that was the only female class that ever fought alongside men. There was no other class that is recorded in history that fought alongside men. And you go
I
back to the,
was,
the.
I'm trying to find out which one went, and I can't remember now.
I appreciate that. I'm telling you, you know, the Picts used to drink a bunch of whiskey and run naked into battle, screaming because it would terrify the Romans. I'm just saying I'm aware of this stuff. You know, I had to research this stuff to talk about my lineage. But, yeah, no. There was no, other than the Scandinavians, what they call themselves now, the Norwegian, the Swedish, Denmark, whatever that is now. Yeah. They ran into battle with the men. There was no other women that ran into battle with men and fought.
Definitely no reason, right?
The Scandinavians at large. The Vikings.
And the Soviet women did. World War II.
Yeah, the so
800,
okay.
800,
oh my God. Are you kidding
women.
Me? Yeah, okay. You're talking about the Soviet sniper? Where the Soviet Empire was so desperate.
No, 800,000 women fought along Soviet.
Do you know why the Soviet Empire sold Alaska to America?
Why did he sell it to Alaska?
Because they were getting their butt kicks in a naval war against the Japanese. That was the reason they needed money. No. That's a precursor. I'm happy to explain all this to you. It's very sad that those women had to fight in the Soviet war in World War II. It was completely unnecessary.
It was 800,000 of them.
Yeah. You think how many of them actually stepped up on the front lines, though?
I don't know how many stepped up on the front lines.
Yeah, probably not many. Because that's not how we treat women.
As a matter of fact, by the end of the war, more than 2 million women did
that. Yeah. Do you know what happened, though, in that war?
Sorry, go ahead.
They took over cities. Stalingrad? Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
The most violent confrontation in World War II, Stalingrad? That was not something to walk away from. How many women died in that? Who knows?
Yeah, we don't know.
They tend not to write these things down.
Well, I'm sure they wouldn't want to.
Yeah, I'm just saying the reality of the situation.
Just one woman sniper, killed over 309 Germans by herself.
Yes, and there was a male Norwegian, or I don't know, he was Swedish or something.
La Malia Cinco.
Yes. No, I'm not going to discount the woman's ability to hit hard from afar. I will never dispute that. Sure, that's awesome. The scariest sniper in World War II was a guy who heard, hey, Norwegian people, the Russians are coming across the border and so are the Germans. Pack yourself a couple of sandwiches, get your rifles, and see what happens. And he literally packed himself up a couple of sandwiches, and he went out, and he had shot at a bunch of people that were marching into his country.
Mm-hmm.
And they couldn't see him. And I have to appreciate that guy, because, dear Lord, that's the scariest MF that you will ever encounter, is somebody that is just defending his own country, not involved in your conflict, that is sitting in the hills that you cannot see. Oh, what a sweet story. But no.
Well, I want you to listen to this because I want to hear what you want to say. What would you like to hear about this? What would you like to say about this, I should say, after I play it? Well, this is a, I don't know if you ever heard of the Mayor Cohen podcast with Michael Cohen?
Oh, yes, sir. No, so, go ahead and play it. No, I was just muting myself out.
Okay.
I just want to hear it.
I want you to hear this, and then we're going to talk about it on the other side.
Michael Cohen, and you're listening to the Mea Culpa podcast. As the Ukrainian war enters its third week, it appears that Russia's madman dictator Vladimir Putin badly misjudged his country's ability to impose its will upon the Ukrainian people. Putin has but one objective, to crush the independent Ukrainian state, to liquidate or imprison its most vocal supporters, and force the nation to become a vessel of Moscow.
Russia has crossed so many red lines, Mr. Putin has, in regards to violating international norms and laws. He must be held accountable for his war crimes. He has committed war crimes, and he should be held fully accountable. We saw that happen after World War II. We said we never allow atrocities to occur again, and we have. And here you have a major country clearly crossing the line of what is acceptable.
But nearly 2 weeks into President Putin's invasion of Ukraine, Europe's largest land war since 1945, the image of a Russian military as one that other countries should fear, let alone emulate, has been shattered.
Kyiv was the main effort of the several prongs, four prongs, initially that invaded Ukraine. But it bogged down almost immediately because Vladimir Putin massively underestimated the capacity of the Ukrainian army to fight, the population to resist, and the resilience of the Ukrainian government. And those three things together have given the Ukrainians, in the last tactical mile, so to speak, enormous capacity to engage and defeat the Russians.
Ukraine's military, which is dwarfed by the Russian force in most ways, has somehow managed to stymie its opponent. Ukrainian soldiers have killed more than 3,000 Russian troops, according to conservative estimates by American officials.
And they are fighting bravely in the streets and outside their cities. They're fighting very creatively. And I think, you know, it's a mark of their courage and their skill that here we are a week into this operation, and the only city that we can even talk about remotely being controlled or being taken by the Russians is that southern town of Kherson. They still have not really made any appreciable progress towards Kyiv, although it is certainly coming under a violent bombardment. bombardment. Kharkiv as well, a lot of fighting there. So they have not made the progress that we believe they had intended to make by this point in their war.
Ukraine has shot down military transport planes carrying Russian paratroopers, that they've downed helicopters and blown holes in Russia's convoys using American anti-tank missiles and armed drones supplied by Turkey, the official said, citing confidential U.S. intelligence assessments. The Russian soldiers have been plagued by poor morale as well as fuel and food shortages. Some troops have crossed the border with MREs, that's meals ready to eat, that expired in 2002, U.S. and other Western officials said. And others have surrendered and sabotaged their own vehicles to avoid fighting.
Putin started this war as a war of choice, and it has now become a war of necessity for him. He has to make gains, either to win outright or to force the Ukrainians to capitulate at the negotiating table. So we are seeing this now, this kind of siege operation going on across Ukraine and no willingness to allow humanitarian corridors.
It's a turnabout that not only proves to be a challenge for Russia's standing in Europe and abroad, but within our own borders. Suddenly, the far-right goons within the GOP who have made a show of supporting Putin have been forced to eat crow. I'd rather say they've been forced to eat shit. Their genius friend who was going to walk into Ukraine and impose his will is getting his fucking ass kicked by a vastly outnumbered foe.
I knew Putin very well. He's got a lot of great charm and a lot of pride. Putin declares a big portion of the Ukraine as independent. And I said, this is genius. And he's going to go in and be a peacekeeper. There were more army tanks than I've ever seen. They're going to keep peace all right. You got to say, that's pretty savvy. I knew that he always wanted Ukraine. I used to talk to him about it.
I mean, what he's done for Russia is really amazing, and he's done it by outsmarting our country at every single step.
The day after the Olympics, he starts with Ukraine. The day after. How smart? How smart? How smart?
Furthermore, Trump and company were poised to raise vast amounts of money off the Russian invasion. But that, of course, depended on Putin overrunning the country. Biden's so-called weakness now looks like smart diplomacy. And Trump is left to answer for his past actions in holding the Ukrainian people hostage with his sleazy blackmail demands. But leave it to these fucking scumbags to try to rewrite history to their advantage.
I have not met President Zelensky, but during the impeachment, the first impeachment 3 years ago, you felt like you got to know him as we study what this about the phone call and everything else. And you could tell this was a different leader. This was a guy of courage. This guy was committed to making sure he did the best for his country. He's a good man. God bless him and the people of that great country.
The first sign of political trouble came early last week. As the world responded to Russia's war in Ukraine, Donald Trump issued a written statement that claimed, amongst other things, he heroically provided Ukraine with very effective anti-tank busters known as javelins. It was proof, the former president suggested, of how incredible and magnanimous he was to Zelensky.
I think it's important for everybody to understand that after, 30 years of a very close relationship with Ukraine, bipartisan support, Democrats and Republicans, that was interrupted in the Trump era. Remember, he was impeached because he withheld military assistance. I want to repeat that. He withheld military assistance to Mr. Zelensky so that because he wanted alleged dirt as a quid pro quo from the Ukrainian government.
What the Republicans neglected to mention is that he initially didn't want to provide Ukraine with the javelins. And when he grudgingly changed his mind, Trump tried to extort our ally. He provided the military assistance if and only if Ukraine helped him cheat in the 2020 election.
I do want to ask you about something that you recently said in an interview, that former President Trump's political failure played at least a small role in this invasion we're seeing right now. How so?
Well, you know, when the controversy over Ukraine and where the Democratic National Committee server was and what Hunter Biden's financial arrangements were in Ukraine, President Zelensky had just assumed office. And he knew that dealing with the Russians in the Donbass and their annexation of Crimea was going to be one of his top priorities. And yet he was unable to establish a relationship with the President of the United States, who only wanted to talk about putting pressure on Ukraine to help out his political fortunes. That went through the end of 2019. It went through the entire 2020 election. Very, very difficult to get attention at the Oval Office level. And so when Biden came into office, they were way behind in the sort of relationship that Ukraine should have had. And I think Putin was waiting for the election to be over. I don't know that he had any idea who would win, but I think this was a long delay in Zelensky's ability to establish a relationship at the top level with the United States. And so I do think it had a role. It wasn't dispositive, but you can't dismiss the loss that Ukraine needed that it couldn't fill.
Nevertheless, it was a reminder that the race to rewrite the history of Trump's Ukraine scandal, the scheme that led to the first of the Republicans' two impeachments, was on.
Well, first off, we could have passed aid to Ukraine a week ago. There was no reason to wait to include it in this massive spending bill that's coming up soon that we've been working on for months, and we should have passed it a week ago. And if we can't get that big bill passed this week, we should pass it as its own bill. Second, the Biden administration and the Democrats should stop telling Vladimir Putin what we're not going to do. This goes back to the early days whenever the president first said that we'd under no conditions send troops to Ukraine. Well, even if that's our policy, Harris, we shouldn't be telling Vladimir Putin what we won't do and then continually reminding him what we won't do. It projects weakness and indecision, and it allows him to continue to escalate in Ukraine. Again, we could have avoided this war from the beginning if we had been firmer with Vladimir Putin, starting when this buildup occurred in late September and early October before it became known to the wider world in late November, early December.
The former president kept this going yesterday, issuing another stupid-ass written statement boasting the fake news media refuses to report that I was the one who very early and strongly gave the anti-tank busters, the javelins, to Ukraine. This remains delusional. Congress approved the military assistance. Trump didn't want to provide the assistance at all, and he ultimately tried to leverage the assistance to advance his own ambitions.
Well, you know, you never know about bravery. Some people think they're brave and they're not brave, and other people don't think of themselves as very brave and they step up. You never know until you get tested. And he's being tested at the highest level, and so far he's really shown great leadership and great bravery. They say he was an actor or a comedian, and all of that's fine, but he is showing a lot of bravery so far, and hopefully we won't have to need that too much longer, because maybe things can end. This should not happen. This should never have happened.
And Putin, you said that if he didn't say Putin would kill him. Is that true?
Well, that's what he thinks. I believe he does think that, and it's probably true. But he's showing great bravery, absolutely.
According to the official White House call summary, Zelensky specifically told Trump as part of a discussion about security measures, we are ready to continue to cooperate for the next steps. Specifically, we are almost ready to buy more javelins from the United States for defense purposes. A moment later, the Republican replied, I would like you to do us a favor, though. What followed was a scheme in which the then-American president tried to leverage security aid to an ally in the hopes that Zelensky and his government would help Trump cheat ahead of the 2020 U.S. election.
Trump immediately follows saying, quote, I would like you to do us a favor, though, because our country has been through a lot and Ukraine knows a lot about it. I would like you to find out what happened with this whole situation with Ukraine. They say CrowdStrike. CrowdStrike is the name of the cybersecurity company that investigated the DNC server hack in 2016. Trump continues, I guess you have one of your wealthy people, the server, they say Ukraine has it. There are a lot of things that went on, the whole situation. I think you're surrounding yourself with some of the same people. I would like to have the Attorney General call you or your people, and I would like you to get to the bottom of it. The president then brings up Robert Mueller's testimony before Congress the day before, quote, as you saw yesterday, that whole nonsense ended with a very poor performance by a man named Robert Mueller, an incompetent performance. But they say a lot of it started with Ukraine. Whatever you can do, it's very important that you do it, if that's possible.
As outrageous as Trump's misconduct appeared at the time, it looks even far worse now as Zelensky makes his appeal for arms on a daily basis.
What Ukraine needed was for Trump to support its new untested, uncorrupt president on the world stage, so he was taken seriously by his neighbors, including Russia, and by his fellow citizens, so that he could be the real leader he needed to be in fending off Vladimir Putin. Instead, Donald Trump chose to try to leverage the situation for his own political gain. And for President Zelensky, having that military aid frozen, having the President of the United States try to shake him down, well, that cost Zelensky in terms of power. It cost him in terms of respect. It cost him in terms of his authority against Vladimir Putin. And who can say what it might end up costing him now that he is in a war that may come down to a matter of small degrees here and there. Back then in 2019, when Zelensky called Trump, there was an opportunity for the American president to stand behind Ukraine, an opportunity to do better. Donald Trump didn't take it.
Prior to the war, though, many doubted that he would be able to mount any defense of his country in the face of Russian aggression, let alone a full-out attack. One common refrain about the Ukrainian leader was that he was in over his head, as editor-in-chief Olga Rudenko of the Kiev Independent put it in an op-ed in the New York Times. But within hours of Russia's invasion, Rudenko was among the many who had reassessed the 44-year-old vaudeville actor turned world leader, stating on Twitter, President Vladimir Zelensky has made many really bad mistakes, and I'm sure will make many more. But today, he's showing himself worthy of the nation he's leading.
After many initially doubted his capabilities as a wartime president, Ukraine's Volodymyr Zelensky has emerged as a hero in his nation and around the world. Despite having multiple chances to evacuate, the actor-turned-politician has stayed in Kyiv during the attacks, reportedly telling U.S. officials this, quote, I need ammunition, not a ride. Zelensky has kept Ukrainians updated on the invasion through videos posted on his social media accounts, calling for resolve against the advancing Russian military. This as he acknowledges the danger he faces, saying in one video that intel has revealed him to be the number one target of the Kremlin. According to two sources who spoke with Axios, Zelensky ended a video call with EU leaders last week by saying, quote, this might be the last time you see me alive.
The original criticism of Zelensky, largely surrounding failures to crack down on corruption domestically, was surely fair. But there should have been at least one indication that he would be able to step up to the moment. That Zelensky's adept navigation in 2019 of the impossible situation of being blackmailed by the President of the United States as the President of Russia pointed its guns directly at his nation's heart.
For me, the most important thing was to preserve our relationship. For me, it was most important to hear that we as countries support each other.
It's worth revisiting Zelensky's central role in Donald Trump's first impeachment to understand just how important it was for Zelensky to receive the U.S. military aid. Zelensky became president in May of 2019, and almost immediately, Trump's personal attorney, Rudy Kaludi Giuliani, began a pressure campaign to try to force him to announce an investigation of a Ukrainian gas company associated with Joe Biden's son, Hunter, as part of an apparent effort to weaken Biden ahead of the Democratic presidential primaries.
All we need from the president is to say, I'm going to put an honest prosecutor in charge. He's going to investigate and dig up the evidence that presently exists, and is there any other evidence about involvement of the 2016 election. And then the Biden thing has to be run out. I don't know if it's true or not. I mean, I see him bragging about it on television. And to me, as a lawyer, it sounds like a bribe. Somebody in Ukraine's got to take that seriously.
Giuliani also puts Zelensky to announce an investigation into convoluted conspiracy theories that it was actually Ukraine that had meddled in the 2016 election as a way to distract from Russia's actual campaign to boost Trump.
Last November, I got information from a reliable investigator, international investigator, that there was a certain amount of activity in Ukraine during the 2016 election that involved Ukrainian officials and Ukrainian citizens, mostly officials, being asked by our embassy and possibly by other American officials. Basically, I mean, the statement was to produce dirt on then-candidate Trump and Paul Manafort. If he could make some statement at the right time that he supports a fair, honest law enforcement system and that these investigations go wherever they have to go, going to be run by honest people, that would clear the air really well. And I think it would make it possible for me to come and make it possible, I think, for me to talk to the president and see what I can do about making sure that whatever misunderstandings are put aside. And maybe even, I kind of think that this could be a good thing for having a much better relationship where we really understand each other.
All of this was happening as Zelensky was desperate for some demonstration of support from the United States president, as 13,000 of Zelensky's people had been killed in the five-year conflict between Russian-backed separatists and government forces in Ukraine.
In the Ukrainian presidential office, they took it very seriously. Then, as now, the country was fighting a desperate war against Russian-backed rebels in its east and heavily depended on U.S. weapons and military aid to hold its ground, including millions of dollars that had been frozen by the Trump administration while Giuliani pursued these political investigations. Mindful of the need for a strong relationship with Washington, the Ukrainian presidential advisor on the call tried to assure Giuliani the investigations he wanted would be looked at.
And we are ready this day immediately communicated to coordinate, to work and investigate everything which you listed.
But privately, Ukrainian officials say they were alarmed at being sucked into American politics, especially when Giuliani repeatedly suggested compliance would open the door to closer U.S.-Ukrainian ties, even a presidential meeting, undermining the former U.S. president's assertions that he never sought political favors from Ukraine to secure U.S. support, so-called quid pro quo.
I want nothing. I want nothing. I want no quid pro quo.
Aside from the corrupt nature of Trump's demand, there were strategic reasons that Zelensky could not acquiesce during that call. Zelensky could not risk being seen taking sides in a U.S. political playground rumble for fear of alienating one party or another when his country needed so desperately the support from America.
We give money to Ukraine, and it's bothered me from day one, and you have plenty of people just here. I say, how come it's always the United States that gets ripped? Frankly, Ukraine, we want to help them. And I do like the new president. You know why I like him? Because he was honest. Because he said there was no pressure at all exerted on me, meaning him, by the president of the United States. He said it. By the way, that one sentence should stop this. But he said there was no pressure exerted. But you don't have to ask him. All you have to do is read the transcript, read the telephone call. But what I was having a problem with are two things. Number one, Ukraine is no before him. For tremendous corruption, tremendous, more than just about any country in the world. In fact, they're rated one of the most corrupt countries in the world. And I don't like giving money to a country that's that corrupt.
All of this was a dry run for Zelensky's moment on the world stage. know the irony that standing between Putin, Russia, and the Ukraine was none other than fucking Donald Trump? And Zelensky played the so-called master dealmaker like a chump by stroking his ego and flattering him. Trump still insists that it was a perfect phone call and there was no quid pro quo. But come on, folks, that's bullshit and we all know it. There just wasn't enough evidence to impeach the scumbag. My hope is that the longer the war goes on, the more we will begin to see that it was Trump and his corrupt minions who nearly dealt the fatal blow to Ukraine by holding much-needed aid hostage.
You don't even care about Ukraine. Hold on. Can I give you an alternative perspective? Still no. Can I have a conversation with you about the situation?
Yes, go ahead. Go ahead. Hold.
You got it.
Go ahead.
Oh.
My earpiece is off.
Oh, man.
Go ahead.
Hold on.
Go ahead.
I'm going to make sure you do arm circles and stuff, too.
Can you hear me now? Hello? Hello?
Josh, can I talk or is she talking?
Oh, yeah. Go ahead, Josh. My earpiece out of problem, my earpiece. Okay, go ahead. Go ahead, Josh.
There is a very simple understanding when it comes to the conflict in Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
We fought them in the Cold War. Most of us didn't have an impact on that.
Mm-hmm.
And then they stole it. Oh. Well, I guess, yeah, now there's news again. Oh, the Russian threat again. Can we start to have a conversation about the sense of humor about this shit?
Oh, gosh. Hey, what are you going to do?
I'm not wrong. I may be annoying. I may be consistent, but I'm not wrong.
You're not wrong, huh? Well, you know, there's a... What Michael Cohen says is really true.
Stop treating Russian
really
people like crap.
Hey, if you were born over there, hey, that's
you
the
don't even know where over there is. Get out of here with that nonsense. You don't even know where over there is. Get out of here, you
over
American.
There. Over there. Oh, boy. I tell you. Well,
I'm
it
not
was
wrong.
Great having you on today.
I'm not wrong.
Listen, there's only one thing that we got to remember. There's no business like show business. And Josh, it was great having you on today. Anytime you want to come back, it's great.
No, there's only thing you have to remember.
Yes.
Everybody is annoying as hell. And if you could talk about them, that means that they're getting promoted, regardless of how terrible they are.
There's no business like no business. And remember that. Everybody have a great weekend. You too, Josh.
There's no business like show business, like no business I know. Everything about it is appealing. Everything the traffic will allow. Nowhere could you get that happy feeling when you are stealing that extra bow. There's no people, like show people, they smile when they are alone. Yesterday they told you would not go far. That night you opened, and there you are. Next day on your dressing room they hung a star. Let's go on with the show. The costumes, the scenery, the makeup, the props, the audience that lifts you when you're down. The headaches, the heartaches, the backaches, the flops, cost you out of pounds. The old thing when your heart beats like a drum. The closing when the customers don't come. There's no business like no business like no business I know. You get word before the show has started that your favorite uncle died.